Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And I'm Philip Sage with the Manaway Group in Australia. Fred, you know, I think an interesting topic might be a recent LinkedIn post that I saw regarding the differences between Weibel and the use of Croa Mesa on repairable systems. Thought we might talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good to me because I don't know if it was a mistake or not. I used Weibel on a large factory line that had, it was a bottling piece of equipment. I think it bottled something like 500, you know, quart size things a minute. You can imagine it was a very large, noisy, crazy looking machine. Mm-hmm. And it described the phenomena I was looking at fairly well. As the longer they ran it, and then they made little tweaks to this, that, or the other thing, and their failure rate improved. So they had a decreasing failure rate, and Weibel hit it dead on. I could predict a week from now how often they would have to make adjustments or have problems with it. But I got told later by statisticians saying, "Oh no, don't ever use Weibel on a whole system. It's this, that, and the other thing." And it was like, okay. So I switched over to using mean cumulative function, which mm-hmm. actually found a whole lot easier explaining to people what it is and what it means with the graphic. So I was happy with that. But anyway, I didn't see this meme or this little post on LinkedIn. But can you describe it a bit here on the radio?
Yeah, it was a post by a gentleman who's put up quite a few, and I guess at first read you. Can take it one way was down with Weibel, let's stomp on it on the floor, and up with Croa Mesa and it's the only thing, the best thing since sliced bread. And the more careful read second time through was really an introduction to Croa Mesa techniques on repairable systems. And that kind of got me started in thinking about it a little bit more about how with our research here at Central Queensland University that we're actively doing, where we use synthetic data sets, where we synthesize 100,000 assets, for example, from a known Weibel distribution. So we know the ground source of truth that's hidden in the data. And then we analyze that with various Weibel techniques to see how well they are at recovering the truth. And what we found is, I think, and if you read, I went back and pulled up Crow's paper from the Army material, whatever a MESA stood for or stands for. Mm-hmm. And, the 40 or so pages that are in that paper with some very elegant math also make the foundational admission, if you will, that it's an estimating technique, and it's got some weaknesses, but most people probably don't read that that deep. So anyhow, the first time I read the article, I said, well, wait a minute, we've been doing Weibel analysis for a long time, and it's in our blood, and I know that it works under certain conditions, and I know when it has weaknesses. The bold statement that for repairable systems that Weibel was functionally defunct and would generate the wrong answers. I looked at that and said, well, wait, let's explore this a little bit more.
Well, that's what my practical experience was. And I guess I got lucky because it showed, what they were observing, and I had a model for it. And then I used that model then to say, if you can get your setup in place right the first time and not have to tweak it for a number of days, then you could start with this lower failure rate. And the gist of it was, do they add a second line, or which was close to $1 billion for him to put this in, or create a larger warehouse and hold more finished product, because they had so many variations that they would, you know, they wanted to run longer because they got more efficiency out of their line, but they couldn't afford the quick changeover, which is keeps their warehouse and their assets in storage lower. So they were trying to find that happy balance. And I said, well, if you can improve the startup of your system so that you don't have a week of fussing with it before it gets good, here's the money. Here's where you'll be off and running. And that was all based on Weibel. And but it was just a model. I knew it was just a model. I thought I'd give it a try, and it reflected what we were actually seeing. I could say, all right, give me another week of data. I'll, you know, or another set of running times you have. And I could estimate it, what their actual experience was, you know, 4 days after running or 3 days after running, stuff like that. So, and it wasn't huge, long time frames that they made these runs. The equipment, though, was static. It was just adjusted for different bottle sizes, different fills, different stuff like that. But I got admonished by a handful of other statisticians when I did it at an evening presentation, saying, here's what we found. And they're like, no, you can't ever use it there. No, it's not possible. You know, you can use it on individual failure mechanisms and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we got an answer. it passed the gut test.
Yeah, I think there are cases when a Weibel unrepairable systems is fine. You know, especially if you've got from time zero till the time of failure, it's going to give you an answer, but it's not an answer that relates back, I think, to any of the individual fundamental failure modes. And that's, I think, where Croa Mesa has some advantages. But it's important for those that haven't used it or been experienced to it to realize that it's working on different data sets, but they are equivalent in the first time to failure mode. In fact, the shape factor, the beta value that we've often talked about in Weibel analysis is equivalent to the beta factor, which is the same symbol used in Croa Mesa during the first failure period. But then the beta factor will degenerate, if you will, from a 4 down to a 1 over a period of time. And it's in that period of time with our synthetic data testing, we've been able to actually quantify that the Croa Mesa, really is not it's not well suited, especially if the underlying failure mode is largely dominantly wear out. Back to reading Crow's original paper, the fundamental thing that it was noted to be well suited for was applications to electronics and things that were largely exponential after the burn-in period, which is a topic that probably we could discuss whether any electronics today has a burn-in period.
Yeah, right? I that's another part I wanted to take out of it. It was the Drenix theorem. We talked about it once, long, long time ago, but
yeah,
we got to come back to that. But I talked to Larry, and we were both on associated with RAM's committee for a long time, and I asked him about it, and I'm like, yeah, this is all going to head to being, you're assuming it's exponential. It seems to make this all work, that's what you're trying to get to. And I said, is that even possible? And then I had an issue with them just using MTBF type nomenclatures and numbers at all in bringing all this stuff into it. And I says, wouldn't you be better served by just calling these, tank test runs and fix and keep running type stuff and change designs and keep running, like a halt test, and not worry about quantifying it? Because yeah, you might get there, but the military during that period of time and to this day have a horrible track record of getting designs to actually work in practical applications. So stop with all the fancy math, and why don't we just go do some good engineering? And so we were on a bus trip to some dinner somewhere, and we were talking about that. Yeah, I think he was happy to get off the bus and go have dinner.
Yeah. Now, you know, what the research that we're actively doing at Central Queensland University is using a lot of synthetic data in Weibel and now Croa Mesa applications to suitably test the accuracy of the methodology to recover the ground source of truth. The neat thing about Weibel synthetic data as a general topic is that when you create it, you can create 100,000 assets rather, you know, in a minute or so. Yeah. And by inverting the CDF and solving for the time with a random number generator, and then regress that same data set using Weibull analysis. And the confidence intervals at 100,000 samples, of course, are extremely tight. And, you know, if you start with an eight of, say, 60 years and a beta of four, which is common for, you know, wooden power poles, for example, pretty common set of numbers, what you find is that the whether it's MLE or ordinary least squares approach, that they both are pretty doggone close to 60 years and betas of four. But what you find is then when you subject that to real-world conditions like right censoring or suspensions, as some people call them, where the asset's still in service at the end, you know, at the end of the window of observation, or on the other end, we just in, you know, in 2015, for example, we upgraded to SAP, and now we only have work order data where our failure history is kept from notifications from 2015 forward. So everything before that period of time, we don't know that it failed. And the only thing we know that reaches back into time is the installation date. So we have a left truncated data set. So yeah, with synthetic data, we're able to stagger the entry like a utility would, and then analyze the calendar time, which is very close to the inner arrival times of Croa Mesa, for example, and use that data very accurately to test whether or not the methodology is going to return the right answer. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Drenick a little bit ago, and that's a topic, I guess, for another discussion. But what we find is that there are situations where the long-term equilibrium has not yet occurred.
And I find too many people just go, oh, of course it's exponential. It's a big, complex machine. Right?
Yeah, it's a big, complex machine. But even when we create synthetic data models, for example, you know, let me back up a bit. The Australian Energy Regulator suggests Croa Mesa for a conductor set, you know, linear assets, conductors that run, mm-hmm. you know, 100 kilometers, for example, and carry 300 kilovolt, you know, service, that Croa Mesa is better for those because we make these minor repairs on the actual conductor. And it is, in fact, kind of like a complex machine. But the reality is that, you know, more than a handful of those failure modes, when you really develop a synthetic model, are actually wear out modes, and so what you're actually seeing in the form of a complex machine is various failure modes popping their head up in a random order that kind of looks like it should be an exponential distribution, which is random in nature, but the underlying failure modes, which could be in fact, our synthetic data sets use 12, you know, for a transmission, whether it's, you know, a conductor wrap or a binding or, you know, some other, you know, part of the conductor physics. There are some definite wear out capabilities there. So it's the way that the data presents itself. Now, where I think Croa Mesa really has some benefit is, it, depending on the data that you have, the ability to analyze in both regimes, whether it's Weibull or Croa Mesa, is very attractive, because if you don't get the same similar type of answer, then one of them is got a data problem. And you can use that as a deduction to say, okay, you know, is my analysis robust, or right. do I really need to go look at you know, problems?
Well, you're not suggesting we try three different analysis techniques. If two of them agree, we're good.
Well,
because if you had two analysis and they don't match, then which is the problem?
Yeah, that's a question, and you don't know what two. And if you had three, then you'd have a better indication. But I don't know what the third analysis method would be off the top of my head.
Well, it's based on the mean cumulative function. Is you can do a regression on the lines that are created with that, and it's simply duration on the horizontal axis. For those that aren't familiar with it, duration or time, calendar time on the horizontal. Yep. And count of defects or repairs or whatever. I think it's repairs on the vertical. The one thing to be cautious of it is that the repairs have to be trivial in duration compared to the length of time in service or to the Correct. Operating time. So, because it doesn't show it on the graphic. So if you take out a motor and go rebuild it and it takes 2 months to do it, and you put it back in, it looks like you had 2 months of failure-free running.
Yeah.
In that kind of analysis. It doesn't work when the repair times are significant. And it's significant in that operating sphere of
okay.
what it's doing.
Okay. Yeah.
But you can, once you get that curve, you can fit a line to it. Or yep. You can fit something to it. And I know Weibull did it a couple different ways, and they had some fancy words for it. But it was, it basically gave you that a factor of how well the repair program is working. So are your repairs in general making the product better? Mm. You know, as good as close to good as new or even better? Or is it making it worse as it goes forward? So as if you can think of it as a curve over time, if it's increasing in upward, every repair you make is making the overall system worse.
Yeah.
Because the arrival rate is just showing up faster. And that's not unbelievable. I think Chris is doing a webinar next week, is the time we're recording this, on, you know, repairs add more damage in so many cases. That's a different problem. But if the curve is flattening out, like what the analog version of a Crow-AMSA is that if my arrival rate of failures is slowing down and flattening out and taking longer and longer, each repair I make, it takes incrementally longer before the next failure arrives, which I saw in that factory as they made repairs, their system got better and better, then it'll flatten out, come to some asymptote. Right. Yep. And I think Crow was using log plots so that it looks straight.
Correct. Looks straight. Yeah.
And so the guys at Weibull and a handful of other folks, I've seen it, and I don't have any of it in front of me, but you know, here's a way to fit lines to these things and you can model it and do stuff like that. And that it's a little extra step, but I found that vast majority of the decisions I had to deal with, it didn't really matter what system I used. It was, could my client understand it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic in itself, probably.
I got three of them knocked down.
Yeah, no. And I guess as a general comment to that is that I would say that we're all independently as individuals on the reliability journey together. Where some of us have been on that bus that is taking us on the journey a few stops earlier and gotten to know the bumps of the road a little better. But, you know, I think we all need to recognize that everybody is on the journey, but not everybody has been on the bus for the same amount of time and has the same level of experience.
Yeah. But it's, but you sent me a draft paper you got coming out. It's on this topic.
And, yeah.
But it was sparked by, you know, don't do Weibull if it's a repairable system. And it goes back to some of the same thinking I've run across where people say, no, you don't use MTBF for that. It's non-repairable. You got to use MTTF. right? Yeah. Wait a sec, stop. How do you estimate MTBF? Oh, you take the total time divided by failures, right? Well, yeah. How do you estimate? That's what they told me.
Yeah.
You know, total time, number of failures.
I believe it, but right? Yeah.
And how do you estimate it mean time to failure? Oh, total failures, you know, total time, yep. Runtime at all, and number of failures of all your units. And they're like, okay, so how are they different?
Yeah,
because the unbiased estimator for MTBF is the inverse of the failure rate.
Yes, yes.
Right? And you estimate failure rate by total time, number of failures. And yeah. There are better ways to do it, but you get the same answer.
Yeah, and the interesting thing when you really break down the sequence of up and down, in an availability type state diagram, is that you realize it's the time between failure that's the difference between the mean time between failure that you're trying to calculate, and that includes the time to repair. And so, in order to calculate the mean time between failure for a non-repairable item, there is no time between there is no time to repair,
right.
And so therefore you can't calculate the mean time between failure. You can only calculate the mean time to failure.
Wait a second. I talked to a guy making tires, and he said, I said, how do you end up with your estimate of life? And he was talking about MTBF for it. And
yeah. Like,
he says, well, I know it's technically MTTF, but you can repair tires. But so how do you estimate what you put on the label here? And he goes, oh, we get 100,000 tires and we put them on this great big treadmill and watch tread wear. But we know they're only rated to go 40,000 miles, and we're on these really nice smooth treadmills. And so they don't wear out very much. So we have almost zero failures for these 100,000 tires. And so we can estimate an amazing MTBF value, which has no basis in reality, is which I remind them of.
Yeah, of course not, right.
And it only takes them 20 minutes to run it, because they got all these tires.
I'm not sure that that's a valid test, but
But that's where that comes from, though, is that, that basic math of exponential is saying, it doesn't matter if I test one to failure or I test 100,000 for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think, back to the topic of Crowe and Mesa, the intensity is equivalent to the failure rate in many respects. And then inverting that to get the localized mean time to failure is straightforward as a reciprocal. And that, I think, is where a lot of the testing information comes from, that you take a batch of early performance data, interarrival failure times, and apply it to Crowe and Mesa and calculate the intensity, Crowe called the intensity, which then allows you to say that in this period of time, our mean time to failure was this. And since we've made these design changes or evolutions, or in your bottling case, we've made these adjustments, it's now much improved, and we can show that the inner arrival time of failures has decreased. Therefore, the mean time to failure has gone up. And that's the whole, I think, idea behind reliability growth discipline and MIL 182, right?
Yeah, I get that. And I stopped short of supporting it because they're focusing on MTBF. And I asked Larry one time, do your clients understand what MTBF is? Oh, no.
Yes.
Have you ever had any think it was a failure-free period? I'll get off my MTBF soapbox here. But the idea is that, there was two analysis techniques in that one short piece on LinkedIn. And it's like, it's the answer most statisticians hate giving anybody. Well, it depends. So there are ways to look at it. And I think the major takeaway is understand the limits, the underlying assumptions and limits of whatever analysis you're doing. Because Weibull may be a great tool in many different circumstances. Crowe AMSA is a great tool in its set of places where it's really, really good. You know, mean commutative function is another way to look at stuff, and it has limitations, especially if repair times are long compared to the
right.
to the operating time. And I'm quite sure there's other methods out there, but the underlying part is understand it well enough to know when it's appropriate. And what you were talking about in your analysis work, the research work you're doing, is, yeah, sometimes you need to mock up some data to see how it behaves. You know what the yes. answer should be, but does your analysis support that? Yeah. And play with it. See where the limits and the bounds of it are. Is like, is this, was it IID is independent? I don't know what the second I stands for. We use it so often, I don't even remember what it stands for.
Yeah, the independent part is the thing that fails when you look at repairable systems. But
yeah, because one piece overheats and fails, and it affects the aging of the piece next to it and so on, or it gets more load sharing or stuff like that. Identical devices.
Identical means that they're all the same, right? The same brand of tire, for example.
That's right. But as soon as you do a telephone pulse, you got some or wood, you got some are concrete, you got some of their out of different types of wood, there are different treatments on them. Not identical anymore, and they're in different regions of the world or different installation techniques.
The different regions of the world would probably be in covariates, environmental and soil type, and
just Australia. Just Australia itself is a different world from north to south and east to west.
But if we simplify it and take it back to something that everybody hopefully can understand, a car, right? My car is 10 years old. It's as good as old. But if I lose a headlight, and I drove past a bloke last night who got pulled over by the police because his headlight was out. I mean, he probably got pulled over because he was driving a souped up hot rod as well, but his headlight was out and gave him a reason to pull the young lad over.
Yeah.
But if I put a new headlight in the socket, it's a brand new life, right? It's drawn from the cohort of light bulbs lifetimes, and so if I can with my data, and the problem is that I cannot always do this because the data limits us, but if I can with the data measure the time in service for each light bulb that I put in that old socket. Those are very, very qualified Weibull analysis points, right? It's a brand new light bulb, but it's in an old car in an old socket. So as a, an independent failure mode, it would qualify for Weibull, but it would also fit into the CRO-AMSA regime if I look at all the times that I have something wrong with my car. And make a imperfect repair or a as good as old. The car is still 10 years old, and that's a very valid argument. And if I look at whether or not the car is breaking down more as it gets older, that's the type of information that I think CRO-AMSA can deliver rather readily. But the underlying failure modes and when you mix quite a few of them together to make up a complex machine, that's where the fun becomes. And as I mentioned earlier, our conductor model is built of 12 independent underlying failure modes that we synthesize the data and know exactly which failure mode is taking the conductor, out of service for whatever period of time. The assumption there, again, like your mean cumulative function, is that the repair is negligible. That you can make you can take that out of the equation without practically impacting the accuracy or the usefulness of the result. There are times repairable systems are analyzable with Weibull, but there are times when you don't have the data that says and that's one of the great failures of CMMS systems and work order systems to failure code, which would be another topic, right? Ability to have the data that is stratified into the individual failure modes is what separates, the ability in some cases to do Weibull analysis from a higher level CROAMSA or mean cumulative function approach.
Yep. Now there's lots of way to go for it. And then I think I've written down 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.5 ideas for future topics. Yeah. But I think we should wrap this one up here saying, a quick 30-second read on LinkedIn is, I think, as it did with you and today's topic, is give you something to go think about and go research. If that doesn't smell right to you, go check it out. I think what I tell my kids, don't believe everything you see on the internet.
Yes. Yeah. No, it did spark some interesting discussion. It's also spawned some additional research that we had in the pipeline. And, having already generated the data to support it was very easy to roll into. And you've got 3 or 4 more topics to talk about. I've got 3 or 4 more journal articles in the can. Yeah, so
we'll say thanks to that post being done on LinkedIn and across your desk, your feed, because it had a lot of value. It wasn't probably what he intended, but it might be. I don't know. But yeah, either way, we should wrap it up. And if you're listening to this and you're wondering what in the world are you guys talking about, Philip and his team are doing a bunch of research, and hopefully that'll get published out in one day or another. But we'll keep talking about variations and pieces of it. But more specifically, if you've got a question or you've seen something online and you're like wondering about it, let us know. Send it on over. You can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us there. Philip and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So there's lots of ways for you to get in touch with us. And if you're curious about something or something piques your interest or any of that kind of stuff, and maybe we could help you with our experience or at least give you some things to think about as you consider what's going on there. So with that, Philip, thanks for being on LinkedIn, I guess, and running across that, it just kind of fit into your research. That was pretty cool. And good chatting with you again. I hope to catch up with you again real soon.
All right. Well, thanks, Fred, and all the best.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.